Welcome to Viet Cinema Canon. Once again, my host of this subseries at the Vietnamese podcast will be in conversation with filmmaker Ham Tran. Ham and I go back to the days of Journey from the Fall. And I think that when we think about filmmaking reaching the next level, Ham is now certainly hitting the world stage with his projects with Netflix. And I'd love to hear more about this, how we can join the likes of South Korea and Japanese cinema.
Those films like Parasite or Bong Joon-ho, or you think of, you know, Kurosawa, you know, like these are like, you know, world auteurs, right? And I think, and like for Vietnam, our part of the scene, a lot of overseas Vietnamese went back to Vietnam to basically work in the Vietnamese film industry and really build it, right? And Ham is one of those early filmmakers. And, you know, he's been making consistently just feature films for Vietnam. You know, he's a twice, had two films that premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, Journey from the Fall and also Malika. And, but like, you know, going back to your argument, like, or when, is there like a comparison between other East Asian kind of like film canons, so to speak?
Yeah.
And I think it's like, again, this is the whole point of the Viet cinema canon, is to really put a spotlight on this, because there are a lot of local films being made in Vietnam that are doing really well in Vietnam, box office wise, as their cinema going is kind of vibrant and young, and like, you know, they're building more and more theaters and whatnot in the country. But there's also this like carryover of like, a lot of art house films made by Vietnamese filmmakers are going to major festivals like Sundance and Cannes, Venice. For you know, the way we watch films now, film and TV, it's like everything's on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Netflix is like kind of like the big dog. I really want to talk to him because he's kind of like become, you know, he wrote and produced a new series, like a kind of a horror genre series that's kind of like an anthology called Devil's Diner, which is a Netflix production. And now is available worldwide on Netflix.
Right.
Getting rave reviews. It's going number one in several Southeast Asian countries. And really, it really kind of like, and what's great is that it represents, you know, just kind of like the expanse of what a Vietnamese storytelling. Because a lot of it's a horror series, but it's rooted in kind of Vietnamese familial, spiritual kind of like tenets, right?
Right, right, right.
I think it's really cool.
Awesome. Join Anderson Lay and Ham Tran in their conversation.
In this episode, I, you know, have a great pleasure interviewing my friend and colleague, Ham Tran, who's a writer, editor, director, and producer, and has become one of the most viable and vital directors in the Vietnamese film industry. Ham has a BA in English Literature from UCLA and an MFA from the UCLA Films School of Film and Television. His first two short films, The Prescription and Pomegranate, were semifinalists for the Student Academy Awards. And, you know, The Anniversary, which is about two brothers separated by the Vietnam War, qualified in an Academy Award for Best Live Action Short in 2004 and won more than 30 International Film Festival Awards. His debut feature narrative film, Journey from the Fall, world premiere at Busan Film Festival, and also played at Sundance, and also played at probably more film festivals around the world. And that was pretty much his kind of his calling card as a, you know, not only as a Vietnamese director, but as an Asian American director and an American director in general. And, you know, but, you know, he always had this calling to go back to Vietnam, where he was born. And then left with his family. But, you know, came back to Vietnam and I think full time in 2012, 2013, where he directed several films for the Vietnamese domestic market, from How to Fight at Six of Chiels, Hollow, Bitcoin Heist, She's the Boss, and Micah, the Girl from Another Galaxy, which world premiered at Sundance 2022. And kind of his kind of return to Sundance with that family film. And you know, he's working on several projects, including just finishing wrapped a film called Hijack 78, which is coming out this summer in Vietnam. And now he's also ventured into streaming series with his first one, Mắt Tích Đêm Ba Mươi, which was for the streaming series Galaxy Play in Vietnam. Premiered during Lunar New Year last year, which was a big hit. and now just released his latest streaming series, Devil's Diner, which is now released and available worldwide on Netflix. So, Ham, thanks for being joining me for this conversation.
Thanks for inviting me. This is exciting. I mean, I rarely do interviews, you know, so this is very cool that we get the chance to talk. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the idea for this kind of sub-series for the Vietnamese podcast was basically just to talk about filmmakers and the diaspora, especially, you know, this is an auspicious year, 2025 being the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. I just wanted to kind of like just interview some filmmakers from across the Vietnamese diaspora spectrum, you know, new filmmakers, emerging filmmakers, veteran filmmakers, filmmakers who are working in different genres, you know. I wanted to invite you because I feel that you are a kind of like a how do you call it? A generalist, so to speak, and I say that in a very good, good terminology, in the sense that you love films, but you love commercial films, and then you are also, you know what, you're a journeyman director. You work in various genres. You work in romantic comedy, horror, heist movies, kids films. What was your kind of like inspiration, you know, growing up? You know, I think what were some of the films that you grew up with that inspired you, or maybe even like in your formative years in the high school and college, what that kind of like was imbued in your kind of outlook in film and filmmaking, and what inspired you to take this path?
To be honest, I didn't even know when I was going to be a filmmaker until after I graduated college. It was only like my third year that I started taking film classes, and I was like, oh, I think this is what I want to do. I think this is what, you know, because I've always loved doing like different forms of art. Like I sketch, I draw, I paint, I sculpt, I do a lot of different things, but never was really good at any one format. But then I just felt like film was, but I love storytelling, right? And film was that medium that incorporates all other forms of art with storytelling. And I thought, wow, if I could do this, this would be great. So I applied during my senior year and got rejected. Then I was helping on Justin Lin's student films, you know?
Okay, Justin Lin from Better Luck Tomorrow and eventually the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah. And then, so he was my inspiration, right? He was like, somebody that I was like, this is amazing. And then seeing films like in 1996, like Three Seasons by Tony Bui and Tim Bui. And I remember this when you know, I finally got into film school, and on Tim's film, Green Dragon had just been released, and it was doing the festival circuit. So it was playing at VC, Visual Communications, LA Film, Asian Film Festival.
LA Asian Pacific Film Festival, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so he got up on stage, he made this incredibly eloquent speech, you know, about how like he made the film because his mother was always afraid of the moonlight and he never knew why. And then finally, when he heard the story of how they came over, you know, from Vietnam, he finally, and then having to, you know, live through the refugee camps, he finally understood. And so he made Green Dragon, which is a movie about, you know, an immigrant family coming over, and then their time in the refugee camps, Camp Pendleton. And so I was like, damn, that's what I want to be, you know? And growing up, like the films that inspired me, I always loved Kubrick films, even though, you know, high school, some of it went over my head, but I just felt like I really, you know, I was amazed.
Stanley Kubrick, like, I mean, what's your favorite Stanley Kubrick film?
Oh, God. Well, I really love The Shining, to be honest.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
And I think it's because of growing up in Vietnam, I've always been afraid of ghosts, and I've always seen things that scare the shit out of me. I mean, it's the silliest story, but like my very first introduction to like American cinema was Live and Let Die. It's a James Bond film, right? So my family and I, we kind of go to the beach, which is in Vung Tau, when I was growing up in Vietnam. So we go there to clean up the the graves, you know, for our ancestors.
Right.
And if
it's when you were a kid.
When I was a kid, because we were like,
up,
I'm like third generation Chinese, ethnic Chinese, Vietnamese. And so we'd stay at the hotel and I would sneak into the screening rooms, you know, and I remember very clearly, like, crawling in under the table and then just watching through the legs of the table as the foreigners were sitting there watching, you know, the rich people and the foreigners sitting there watching Live and Let Die.
Right? Oh, the James Wan movie.
The James Wan movie. And it was that you know, opening sequence with the voodoo, right? And the guy.
Right.
And I was like, ah, you know, and I think that was what really scared me and really gave me the sense of like making horror movies.
Wow.
Yeah. But then, you know, and I guess you could start to understand why I make films in so many different genres, because I'm a fan of so many different genres, right?
Yeah.
So one of my all-time favorite films is The Princess Bride.
Right. Yeah.
And I realized, my top three films of all time, like, are all Rob Reiner films. This is The Princess Bride, Misery, and When Harry Met Sally. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Man, Castle Rock, man. Castle Rock Entertainment. What a studio. Run a production company. Yeah. Amazing. All those films. Like, yeah. Amazing. It is Stand By Me. Stand By Me. Is it
Stand By Me. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think what it is it's that they're all about characters and it's all about family. You know? And I think that's where, if you look at all of my films, I only make one films, you know, even though they're in different genres, but I only tell one kind of story, which is families and you know, how they overcome past traumas, right?
Right, right. Yeah, the resiliency of like, you know, just family bonds and whatnot, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, you're very rooted, you're Gen X, right? You're Gen X, right? So,
We're Gen X.
You know, I think it's like, you know, going back to how you were inspired by Justin Lin. This is like on the late 90s, you know, 90s to mid 90s to late 90s, right? And you're inspired by the Bowie brothers. You saw Green Dragon, and Tim Bowie made that kind of like inspirational kind of inspirational speech about stories.
Wong Kar-wai, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
and like, and international cinemas like Emir Kusturica, you know?
Yeah.
Like Underground, like I saw Underground, I was like blown away. I was like, wow, one day I hope to make a Vietnam War film that's like at the level of Underground, you know?
Well, you know, when you in college, this is like, college is like so formative. That's really when you kind of discover films, right? And like you know, basically like, wow, you watch that one film that's like, oh wow, this is like, cinema's more than just like Star Wars or Goonies, you know? So like, it's like really kind of, you know, so that I think it's like you're just soaking it all up, right? So
yeah.
But you know you decided to, you know, pursue filmmaking, and you know, it was at a time, you know, like, you know, this is like the end of the, you know, the 90s, early aughts, and like, you know, you have other Asian American directors and whatnot, and like, you know, it was kind of tough, you know. I think this is pre Crazy Rich Asians, pre Everything Everywhere All at Once, pre Parasite, you know, like, I mean, not that it's easy to, you know, to be an Asian American creative in the U.S. but still, it's a lot, you know, there's more space, so to speak, right? There's more for the marketplace, like, you know. So I think you were after, what am I trying to say? Yeah, Green Dragon, and then you continue on, you make the Anniversary, you make Pomegranate. These are award-winning films about, you know, family trauma. But you know, inspired by your family upbringing, stories from your family. And then you make Journey from the Fall, which made a huge splash at Busan and Sundance. But then, like, you know, I mean, you even though you were born and raised in Vietnam, you moved to the U.S. with your family when you're 8. What made you decide to go back to Vietnam full time?
I think first of all, it's the kinds of story that I wanted to tell was always about my experience, you know? And so, it was really hard to actually make that in America. But now I'm actually, you know, looking at projects that I'm catching up basically to my experience as a child, because I think that I wrote this in my entrance, like, you know, you have to submit for the application for film school. And I said, no, for me, you know, we live half our lives trying to recover from things from our childhood, and we're trying, you know, the other half of it trying to go beyond that, right?
Yeah.
And so I think I've only caught up to the first part and all the stuff from my childhood, you know. And so there's a series, and you know this very well, there's a series that I also want to write, which is based on my, you know, coming over to America and growing up in Orange County, you know, called Bolsa Boys, right? Being in sort of late in the 90s with the new wave music and in Asian gangs and everything like that. So I'm still catching up to what I went through as a kid, coming over to America and being a refugee kid, you know? And then the other half is just now looking at what Vietnam has become. And I think that goes to answer your question. Why did I come back to Vietnam? But the second part of that is opportunity,
right? Was it a gold rush?
It was like, it was a wild west, man. Everybody was back east though. And then shooting. And so, I was actually like a latecomer, right? Cause that happened in the early 2000s. And because I had made Journey from the Fall, I was not allowed to direct any films in Vietnam until, you know, 2011, 2012. And so,
yes, I mean, I don't want to go into it, but it was just basically, you know, kind of inspired by, you know, the stories of the Vietnamese Bull people, you know, and whatnot. So, you know, I think it's like, you know, we have this again, you know, just, and you understand it's like, you know, just, look, you're blacklisted in Vietnam, you know. So,
yeah.
So you have come
on the list of sensitive directors. Still am,
right?
Because they don't forget that. But you know, but I think that I have come a long way, because I think that from Journey from the Fall to Micah, which is a film that's partially invested by the Vietnamese, you know, government, is that border tourism, you know, is like, wow, it's come full circle. And even now with the Hijack 78, it's a story that takes place during that time of when all the boat people were.
Yeah, based on true events too.
But stories that was not allowed by the government to be told in the last 50 years, and finally, we're able to make it with, you know, the participation of government censoring us all along the way, but making sure that we're doing things that we're allowed to talk about. You know, but at least we're able to talk about it, which is, for me, it's a huge step forward, you know?
Is it because, I mean, like, you look at, you know, the people are saying, especially globally, U.S. or globally, a lot, you know, the theatrical market's been, you know, like movie going is kind of on the decline, you know, but, you know, the movie going audience tends to be older, you know, people are just waiting for streaming, or there's, you know, rampant piracy and all that stuff. But in Vietnam,
not in Vietnam,
it's very, very, very vibrant, you know, like, it's basically, you know, as the economy gets better, people's, well, you know, like, you know, they're the middle class is growing, obviously, cities like, you know, like Saigon and Hanoi are becoming more cosmopolitan, and then you have like the second and third tier cities are expanding and growing and being gentrified. So, you know, movie theaters, entertainment, there's a big space, a growing space for entertainment, and that's a big part of it is going to the movies, right? So you know, so that's why you know, Vietnamese film, the film industry is actually expanding and growing exponentially versus you know other territories, right? So so there's opportunity, right? So I mean,
but you know what it is though. The interesting thing is it's because the Vietnamese audience they would still prefer to choose a Vietnamese movie over a foreign movie.
Right.
That's the difference. When you're comparing it to the, you know, Thailand, the Thai film market for a while. Now it's actually coming back to being more supportive of Thai cinema. But for a while, you know, people were just happy to watch, you know, like Hollywood films, like, right? And
you Marvel movies, Fast and Furious movies, you know.
In Vietnam, if you have, and especially if you have a story that's heavy with a family story, right? Especially with the theme of sacrifice, parental sacrifice, or familial sacrifice, the child sacrifice, so the father sacrifices so a child. Those kinds of stories just really resonate with the audiences. And so always when you blend that theme in any genre, that film will be a success.
Yeah.
Call it formulaic, but I actually call it like the soul of Vietnamese audiences is that at the end of the day, they still like to see their own lives reflected. You know, they want to be able to see themselves on the screen. And that's a huge thing, right? Because as Asian Americans, we never get to see that. Or at least during the time when we were growing up, we never got to see how Asians were represented, right?
Yeah.
And it's very different. Here in Vietnam, they don't have to have that identity crisis. They're just proud to see more content made in Vietnam.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like this is like kind of the mid 2000s, you know, Vietnam's, you know, again, a socialist republic, you know, and the film industry was, you know, pretty much was basically an arm of the propaganda wing, you know, is basic, you know, a government run industry. But then because of like pioneers like Charlie Nguyen and Johnny Chi Nguyen, like with their film The Rebel, the industry is now primarily privatized, you know, so it's like it's a private entity. You know, commercial films just like Hollywood kind of perform very, very, very well. So like, you know, you going back, you said that you were kind of like late to the game, so to speak, of overseas Vietnamese going back to Vietnam in this, you know, to explore the Wild West, to go to the gold rush of producing and directing Vietnamese language films and TV, mm-hmm. right? So,
yeah.
But then there was like a, you know, I think that, you know, just there was a kind of learning curve, so to speak. You had like say Vietnamese American directors coming in and like, not, you know, not born in Vietnam, they're culturally American or culturally Western, and you know, those films didn't necessarily perform very well. Maybe there was more of a rejection, so to speak, with the local audience. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe comment on that really quick?
I'm not sure if it's a cultural rejection, but there's definitely that whole stigma of like, oh, he thinks he's better than us coming back, you know, trying to teach us. And so my whole thing is like, I've never tried to act like that though, you know?
Yeah.
My only thing is I think it comes from the fact that just personal, and mine is a very different kind of experience, because even though I was not allowed to return to make films, I was still helping others make films in Vietnam.
You're like the film doctor. You're like, yeah, I mean, you are a master editor. You're giving feedback and notes to scripts and whatnot, right? So you were doing a lot
recutting all the films that really made, you know, the benchmarks in Vietnam, like The Rebel, you know, and so many of Charlie's first films in Vietnam, you know, as well as other first time filmmakers like Le Tan Sơn, who made Clash. So, and I think it's because of doing that I, when it came to my turn to making films, I just didn't want to do what everybody else was doing. And I don't want to make that rom-com or just stick in that genre. And so the second movie I had a chance to make, I decided to do a straight horror film, which had not been done in Vietnam. It had always been sort of a mixed genre.
That was Hollow, right? In 20, that was just Hollow. Released in 2013.
Yeah. And so, and I think it's because of that. So for me, I've always tried to do things that's a little different. So I think it's not a rejection of you know, oh, he's an outsider, but it's just something I was trying to make things that people are not familiar with, right? Yeah. And only because I was already doing so much of the commercial stuff that people were familiar with, helping
right.
in helping other people. And so, but having said that, though, that period of the VKs coming back to making films and then making the box office hits, I think we've passed that. We've gone past that now. In the last few years, it's the local young filmmakers who are now making huge. And when I was saying huge, it's huge, like leaps and bounds, you know, beyond what you know, Vietnamese overseas who had returned to Vietnam, those are the films that they were making. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because, again, it's that whole telling the stories that they're more familiar with, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And you're right, though. It's a learning curve for me. And after being here for the last 13 years, when I made Patutemamui, I felt like that was the first time that I actually captured the voice, you know?
The localness of it all.
The localness of it all.
Because it takes place in the Mekong, right? It's based on a true story. It's a true crime series, whatnot. So,
But then I was able to finally learn to capture the local voice. But then I was still able to do what I was doing, which is doing something new, something different.
Right.
Because it had not been a true crime genre before, right? And they had not seen any like TV series or streaming series that look like a feature film. So it was doing both. It was bringing the feature film look to a series platform, but it was also telling a genre that this is new for them, but it was very familiar because the topic was such, you know, one that the entire country knew. If you just talked about the chicken vendor, right?
Well, just give a quick log line of what the series is about.
Well, the series is translated. It's called Missing on the Eve of Lunar New Year. And so basically, in 2019, a chicken vendor, a woman in her 40s, basically got online and live stream and said that my daughter is missing. Please help me find my daughter. And so she's this beautiful 20-year-old who went to deliver some chickens and then never came back. Hmm. And then so she captured everybody's attention because she live streamed and then asked, and they were saying like, oh, I'm not getting a lot of cooperation from the officials, you know, and stuff. And so people were rallying behind her, and the stories kept changing daily. It was like in the next day, it was like, oh no, she's not missing. She's been kidnapped, you know?
Yeah.
And then 3 days after that, oh no, her body's found and she's dead. You know, she's been raped, you know, there are indications that she was raped before she was murdered. And so this is this huge trial. And it goes on. It gets really scandalous, you know, and I won't spoil it for those who want to see the show. But for me, that story, everybody knew. And so when Galaxy came to me, I was like, they gave me the script, but the script is like, if you went on Google and you just Google what the event was, right?
People know what happens, right?
You know, and like, you know what happens. So it's not... If you made a film to try and sort of create this mystery of what happened to this girl, everybody knew. So I said, let's not do that then. Let's do something else. Let's ask ourselves, why would somebody do this, right? Who were the people involved and how did this thing happen? Because when you're looking at the case, it's a little bit like Fargo, you know, where there's certain things where it's so absurd and it's so outrageous, but in some scenes where it's so heartbreaking, you know, that you're like, okay, this is something rich. This is something that we can dive into in true crime. Yeah.
Right. Cause it's not a murder mystery, you know, because people know what happened. It's more of like kind of a commentary on a character study on the different, you know, like the drive of the mother who's desperate, you know, to find her daughter. That's why she goes onto social media to basically rally the community and the public to, you know, be part of the investigation. Then you have the, you know, perpetrators and whatnot. It's very fascinating. It's very, very well made. But the, you know, like I'm going back to kind of like, I want to go back a bit, you know, you going back to Vietnam. full time to work in the Vietnamese industry. And like, you know, I think it's inspirational for a lot of young filmmakers, especially in the Vietnamese diaspora. They're interested in like, maybe I should go back to Vietnam and, you know, kind of explore that space. What would be kind of like your recommendation? What would be Hamtran's toolkit, so to speak, to be a successful filmmaker in Vietnam? I mean, you know, like, it's like, look, my Vietnamese is terrible, but like, it's like, first of all, you have to, you know, have a good command of Vietnamese, obviously, right? But, you know, what's great about Vietnam is like, everyone speaks English. I mean, especially in the big cities, you know, so, which is great. You have actually foreigners who are not Vietnamese working in the film industry too, right? And like, as a, you know, DP or an editor or, you know, whatnot. So, but anyway, what is your kind of toolkit?
Well, I think that the thing that's always worked for me is knowing the story that you want to tell. Like, it needs to be something that is really personal to you. And it, because if you're going back there just to make a film, to make money, whatever, then people will see that and they're like, no, that's not genuine. But if you're going back there to tell a story that is personal to you, you'll get a lot of support. And that's the second thing is, and this is something that I've had to learn, is collaboration. And you have to throw away that American mindset or the Western mindset and go back there. And then the Western mindset is very demanding, right? What do you have? What can you show me? What can you give me, right? Which is very different from working here in Vietnam, which is like really taking the time. What do you think, you know? And hey, what about this? How about that? Can you show me this? Can you show me that? So it's more gentle. It's more nurturing and less demanding, right? And it took me a lot of years to understand that, because, you know, coming from UCLA film school, we have the vision, and it's like, oh, you have to, you know, you're not getting the vision. But I think that here in Vietnam, when you're working, it's sharing the vision and really just sitting with them and just talking it out. And you know what? Never underestimate the power of going drinking with people. And then that's when you really get to talk. And, you know, and you don't, I'm not saying that you have to drink them, but the thing is that it's in those sessions that they get to find out who you are.
Yeah.
And that's when you're going to get the love and support, because they're not making films. You don't make films in Vietnam to make money. You make films because you're passionate about it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when they get to know you, they understand your passion. That's when you're going to get the support for your film.
Right. Right.
It's not like throwing around so much money, you know?
So like, you know, working in the, you know, you've been in back in Vietnam full time for almost 10 years now, right? So, yeah, gave it.
Yeah, I was still going back and forth in 2013. So, I mean, I had only officially decided to have my base in Vietnam since 2022, actually.
Right. I mean, we've been back and forth between the States and Vietnam, but, you know.
I was still going back
and forth. Still in Vietnam, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
What is your outlook now, the Vietnamese film industry there locally? I mean, which directors do you, you know, admire, or do you see up and coming?
Well, definitely. Well, I can tell you who are the biggest directors right now. The two main ones are Jung Tan, right? Who makes the Lunar New Year holiday films. He did it with Dad, I'm Sorry, and then House of No Man, and then Mai, and then this year he just came up with a new one.
Yeah, what are the Vietnamese titles for those films? I mean, aside from Mai, of course, but
So the first one was Bo Ya, which is Sorry, and then House of No Man was called Nha Ba Nu.
Yeah,
and Mai.
All those films are available on Netflix worldwide, right? So
yeah, they are.
Yeah, okay.
I think now they are. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. I saw them on Netflix recently.
Okay, yeah, and then this new one's called The Four Guardians, right?
Mm. Which just got released a couple weeks ago, or last week, I think. Right?
Yeah, and it's doing gangbusters. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So you have a lot of actor directors now. So Tu Trang just made her first feature this year.
Yeah, she's a big comedian, right?
Yeah, huge. She has a huge following, but her film's so well made for her first feature, you know. Mm. And so I can't wait to see now what she's gonna do. You know, when she's tried it out, you know, what she's going to do for us in the future. And of course, your second biggest filmmaker is Lehi, which has the Face Off franchise, right? And he's a singer turned, you know, director. Like my Face Off. And it's he only does one film a year, which is his Face Off franchise. And they're all in different genres, but it's still the same franchise. I don't know how that works.
Sure.
But
yeah.
You know,
I think it's more of just a brand. It's just a brand now.
Yes, you know. Brand.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned, but then there are other younger directors like Bakanwa, I think his name is. He made a few heist films, a gangster film, but then last year he produced this dog ghost story. It's a horror film, but you know, you saw it. You tell me.
Oh, yes. Right.
And then he did this Claws, which is Lin Miu, which is part of this whole universe of animal spirits horror films, right?
Right.
The next one's going to be this, you know, the famous, a very well-known ghost story of the pig, the five-clawed pig, the five-hoof pig. It's like, gong hao nam mong, something like that. So it's the pig with five claws.
Right. It's all spawned from his, like, Wicow, right? Crimson Snout is the international title.
Crimson Snout, that's right.
Cool. I mean, like, horror is big.
Horror is big. Suddenly just became really big. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think that, you know, making Hollow had something to do with that. Because
it was with Liu in 2013.
And they still think that they still use that as a comparison, you know, for horror films.
Right.
And then when I did Ting Lin Kai, which is Kuomintang, that also changed the ritualistic films, the horror films that has that have rituals, right? It all had the same kind of look. But you know, you have these directors who are very happy just doing one genre. So like Lehi is just that franchise of his. You have this other director, Zheng Hutang, which is he only makes horror films. And so he made this series called Hellbound Village. You know, he did this Sisters was his latest film, Kong Kam.
Right.
Which is filming at festivals now. So he's doing
the Amsterdam Film Festival right now.
But he's content to only doing horror films.
Cool.
But his films are now getting gorier and gorier because, you know, he likes the jump scares. He likes the body horror and such. Yeah.
Let me ask some. I mean, you know, like it's notorious. Vietnam still has. It's like there's a censorship department. You know. Historically it's been like, you know, that you couldn't make ghost movies. Right? You couldn't make ghost movies because it's again, it's just because of the mandate, you know, just from the communist thinking is like, you know, that you know, ghosts don't exist. I mean, you know, that being said, from like, you know, Vietnam is like the most superstitious. We believe in everything. like it's like, but like, you know, like that's changing, right? Like, you know, like of ghost movies, like, you know, there are ghost movies being released now.
But I could pinpoint the exact film that changed that. It's actually Derek Green's film, The Housemaid.
The Housemaid, because,
That was the first film where it ended, where the ending showed that there was a ghost. The ghost,
because before you'd have to circumvent it by, you know, like it's a dream or it's like, you know, like
somebody was drugged, somebody's lying, they're crazy, or and so you had to explain away the ghost, because once you acknowledge that the existence of ghosts, you have to acknowledge the existence of religion, and they the way it came to religious this question, and so that's where it comes from, right? But because the censorship is now evolving as well. It used to be that there is a censorship board that looks at, reads your scripts and also sends somebody along with you during production.
Right.
Is that
the Edwards is that A1? Is an A1? No.
A25 or something.
A20, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Something like that. And so, but only
in Saul's, this
he was
exactly.
Only in the last few years where slowly they're pulling away from that and they're putting the responsibilities back on the producers. And it's basically, and I think, I think they tend to get scapegoated too, though. I think, you know, people are like, oh, I could have made my film so much scarier if it wasn't for the censors. Really? You know, sometimes. Yeah. I think that you have to be a little bit realistic and honest, you know, and look sure. at it. But again, it was also many films, you know, do get censored to the point where it's not as scary as it should be, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's, I think films that, you know, if they're political, they have a more political message could be, you know, obviously censored, right? But
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but Derek's film changed that. Derek's film at the end of his film, they were like, wait, that's a ghost. And there was no explaining it, you know? And then since then, you would see films getting a little bit more lax. The censorship board changed its policies and everything like that. And now these ghosts are real and they're, you know, they're demons and they're coming out everywhere, you know? And we had the first zombie movie 2 years ago, right?
Right.
And even though it was
that was like taboo. No zombies exist in Vietnam, right? So a couple years ago.
Charlie Nguyen, you know, one of the VK directors, wanted to make a zombie movie 7 years ago. And he was told, you can't do that because zombies don't exist in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, but now that film, even though it was not very good, but it had an occult following. And so they made like part two already, right? It's like franchise, you know? And so, yeah, it's. I actually think it's an amazing time for Vietnamese cinema because the audience is now like their perspective of film has changed as well. Being able to see so much,
their tastes are changing. I mean, it's a market, it's a marketplace. You know, it's a privatized marketplace. People, you know, they need to sell tickets. They need to, you know, it's all about the economic, growth of the market. And like, you know, if the audiences are not satisfied, then the industry goes down, right? So, do you think it's like, talk about kind of like your audience, the audience taste? What is your kind of like POV of how that's changing? Are they becoming more sophisticated, obviously, you know?
Yes and no. I mean, look, like I said, the one thing that has not changed is if you make a film that's primarily the message of the film is about family, it's going to be a hit. And especially if it touches upon a mother, you know, or a parental figure who's...
Okay, that's very specific. Go ahead.
It's very specific. Like Lehi's films, right? Face Off. His biggest Face Off hit, right? He's made all these crazy Face Off. One, their action adventures, their adventure films.
Yeah, they tend to be all these creepy action movies, except for this last one, which was like a family drama about.
It's about who's gonna take care of grandma, she would go from home to from different family members' households, and nobody would wanted to take care of her, and that. Tugged on people's heartstrings, and that was something that the audience is very familiar with. And so, you know, and same thing with Jung Tan's film with when he did Dad, I'm Sorry, right? Boya, and that was about a father who sacrificed for his son, right?
Yeah, filial piety,
and self-sacrificing, and you know, enduring in silence, right? Because that's the culture. And everybody understands that frustration. And everybody dreams of ways that they can sort of grow out of that or acknowledge that or get that talked about in the open instead of, you know, bearing everything by yourself in silence, you know?
Our parents so, don't say "I love you." They express their love by "Have you eaten?" Right?
Now that crosses genre as well, because then you look at Jailbait, and the biggest thing that
what's Jailbait?
Jailbait is a story about this, you know, a 16-year-old girl who basically seduces this 35-year-old to make her boyfriend jealous, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know the film. I just wanted to give you, like, to give, just provide context.
Right. But that wasn't, like, what made the audience love the story was, of course, the lead actress, you know, who's great.
Katie. The movie title is M. Chiu Mui Tam, right?
M. Chiu Mui Tam, I'm Not 18 Yet, right?
Yeah.
And so, what really grabbed hold of the audience was the relationship between she and her father.
Right.
And it was the thing where her father was so accepting of her and forgiving and understanding that everybody wished that they had a father like that. They watched and go, oh my God, if only my dad was like that, right? And it's that kind of
total Trojan horse. Like, people are thinking, like, it's going to be like American Pie or Porky's, but it's really about, you know, a father and daughter story, right? So
Exactly. And then it's the same thing. You look at, you know, one of Charlie's most successful films, Del Am, which is essentially Rain Man, right? It's a rope, like, of two brothers and one guy who's a little, you know, slow. And another guy who really just, you know, was a selfish.
Neurodivergent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing is that whole thing about the brother, the familial story, the familial relationship, you take it across any genre. It could be rom-com, it could be horror, it could be drama. And I'm really excited about that, because talk about Trojan horsing. The person who's great at Trojan horsing is Zhang Tan. He is kind of like the Stephen Chow, because he'll sell you on the humor in the first 30 minutes and make you cry in the, you know, for the rest of the film, and you still love it, right?
That's why he owns Lunar. That's why he owns Tet, right? That's why he owns.
Yeah, he owns Tet, but he's now bringing in drama, right? As a genre, which has never been successful before, because they were like, "Oh, you're making a drama film? That's for TV." No, it's now for cinema, right?
Right.
And so, and you know, you can see traces of it starting to happen with Victor's films, like I see Victor, Yellow Flowers and Bill Steele, right? Victor Vo, who made the adaptations of the book.
Yeah.
Those films were more successful because of the sense of nostalgia for the old, you know, days of youth and, you know, innocence and sort of unrequited love. Every film was about unrequited love, but they were dramas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean he's a you know, like, it's one of the most successful directors working in Vietnam. Also, Vic Yu, who born and raised in Southern California, moved back to Vietnam several years ago, is now, you know, a big.
Who's still director. Very consistent and very prolific. Every year he still makes a film. It's amazing. I really admire Victor. Yeah,
cool. So, like, you know, we're talking about, like, kind of like the, you know, the local domestic film industry and how it's growing, expanding, you know, films from multiple genres are, well, you know, rom-coms and horror are very, very, very popular and whatnot. But, you know, do they travel outside of Vietnam? You know what I mean? Like, are they too local where it's actually very, you know, again, you know, just, they connect with local audiences, but do they travel overseas? You know, like, you look at, like, something like Korea, obviously, the Korean wave, you know, look at, like, the filmmakers like Bong Joon-ho or Park Chan-wook, or, you know, they've gone on to, you know, Korean cinema and, you know, Korean content has gone on to, you know, great success worldwide, you know, I mean, you know, like, you like a K-pop and K-dramas, that's one thing, but you look, I'm like talking specifically on films, like, you know, these filmmakers, they have Oscar winners, you know, these filmmakers and these films are going to major festivals like Cannes, Venice, whatnot. I mean, we see this in Vietnam in the last several years, you know, last maybe 2 or 3 years, you know, we have, like, you know, Cannes 2 or 3 years ago, you know, there was, you know, films that won, you know, major awards at Cannes. You have, like, exciting filmmakers that are going to the festival circuit and whatnot. But what do you see? What is the next stage? You know,
I mean, so the only thing is I see that In a way, though, it still hasn't changed, because the films that do make it overseas, that make it international, are art house films.
Yeah, they don't perform well in Vietnam.
They don't perform well. They don't even show at all, some of them. No?
Right.
And the filmmakers are perfectly content with making films to be shown outside of Vietnam. And so it feels like filmmakers still have to make that choice. Either you make a film that travels, you know, with the festivals, right? That earn international acclaim, or you make a commercial film, right? And so we still haven't seen that one commercial film that crosses over.
Right. And that's across the board, you know. I mean, like art house films, you know, it's more risky for an art house film to perform well, even in North America, you know. So it's like, you know, like it's like, you know, I mean, commercial and art house. That's it's a shared experience, or you know, wherever you are in the world, right? But for you, I mean, like, what do you, as a you know, kind of a stakeholder in the domestic film industry in Vietnam? And also globally minded, so to speak, right? Like it's like, where do you see is the next stage for kind of the Vietnamese film industry to grow?
Because it could get
stagnant. It could get stagnant, right? So if it doesn't change and evolve.
Yes. I do think that we're starting to have the films are starting to travel more, obviously, you know. Like I said, we have a horror film that's now playing at Rotterdam. So we're not necessarily having only art house films that are playing. And hopefully, and I can say this with absolute certainty because I've spoken with Jung Tan. He wants his films to travel internationally, you know? And you saw a little bit of a glimpse of that. And I think that what will help that are the box office numbers, you know? To be able to say, look, this film made $30 million in Vietnam. You know, that's a huge accomplishment. And so that drives people's curiosities. However, unless the writing, you know, level starts to change in terms of like structural wise, because a lot of these films, they're still very sort of like linear storytelling. And so structurally, it's not, it doesn't hit the mark where it becomes universal. It's really still, the stories still are local because of the way they unfold, because of the logic of things, right? It's a little bit hard to explain, but it's this like, okay, this is acceptable in Vietnam. And so people go along with the story. And so the reason why they can't travel outside of Vietnam is when people are like, I'm not sure about that. You know, they're not really accepting of the flow of the story, if that makes any sense. And I'm only speaking in terms of commercial films, because the commercial films are not following the formula. And because they're not following the formula, they're not deemed as relatable.
Is it just because it's just so local? It's like, it's just the Vietnamese mindset, or is it more of a, you know, I mean, like, I mean, I just, you know, we, you know, like a Cung Duc, you know, it's okay. You know, like, it's like good enough.
Absolutely. Because even though, so let's say, for example, you know, like, you know, Lehi's films are super popular in Vietnam. You know, he's doing things that like a foreign audience would never accept. They're like, oh, come on. You know, they're rolling their eyes because it's unbelievable, right? The way that the logic of the story just doesn't flow. It doesn't, you know, when we're writing in screenwriting classes, right? You know, it doesn't track. It doesn't track. Right. So people are doing things and their motivation is completely opposite of what their character should be doing. But it's accepted in Vietnam because it's funny and we'll go with it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that gets in the way of a film that's able to travel. I think you're going to start to see more genre. And that's the reason why we're trying to do more genre films, is that it's easier for those genre films to travel. It's easier for.
Horror travels.
Exactly. Action travels, horror travels. So hopefully we'll start to see a lot more of that. But again, the logic of the horror films, it's still at a point where people are like, oh, I'm not sure that would happen. Or, you know, or the sophistication of the visual effects, it's not there. Yeah. It doesn't like deliver, you know? So I think you're still going to have those hurdles that we, like the filming industry in Vietnam would have to step up in order to cross over.
Well, this is a great segue into horror because, like, you know, that you are working on. Your latest project called Devil's Diner, which is a, you know, 6-episode series, is now just been released worldwide on Netflix. It's, you know, at the time of this recording, it's number one in Vietnam, number one in several other Southeast Asian countries. Talk about kind of like the inspiration behind Devil's Diner.
Devil's Diner was, it's actually an IP that was bought by Netflix from a company. And then I was consulting for Netflix. And when I read it, I was like, this is a great idea. But the script, like I said, it wasn't there. It didn't deliver. Like it proposed this kind of world, but didn't deliver on the theme. And so, Netflix thought, yes, the idea is sound.
There's something there.
There's something there in the execution, just, you know, so they hired me on to showrun it, to rewrite it, to develop it. So we're talking the original script were like 9 pages long, right? They were supposed to be 30-minute episodes. And I said, no, this won't work. And so we redrafted everything. And the theme of it is basically it's similar to the Western 7 Deadly Sins, but we're, you know, I'm using the Buddhist tradition, which is the 5 poisons, right? Which is sun, anger, sea, delusion, pride, greed, right? Yeah. And suspicion, right? And then, so there, the original concept had 8 episodes, and I was like, this is too many, and a few of them didn't deliver. And I said, this is beautiful. We actually only did focus on the 5 poisons and the last one being a story about karma. Then we have 6 episodes, right? And we can expand it from 30 minutes to actually like, you know, 50 minutes.
Close an hour.
Yeah. Close to an hour. And that way you can tell a more complete story. And so that's how we started doing that. But you know, the stories, when I was working with the writing team, so I headed a writing group. Writer's room. And so with the writers, it was great to work with the local writers because they got the culture, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was me trying to provide that framework. Okay, we need to have structure. By this minute, this needs to happen. By this minute, this needs to happen. This is where act one is. This is where act two is. This is how you're going to pay it off in act three. And this is how you're going to, we're going to have that little scene at the end that's a little tag that gets people excited about the next episode that makes them want to see. So following that format, what the Vietnamese audiences, it's been very well received. And the word that they use is cuốn lắm, right? Which means it literally means, you know, pulling in, right? So the story stuck to
you. It hooks you in. Yeah.
It's very engaging. Yeah. And that was absolutely by design.
Little nuggets of like cliffhangers or like things, you know, plot points are seeded and like, you know, they develop, they get revisited later in episodes later, in future episodes. But it's kind of, you know, maybe quick log line. It's basically about a mysterious owner of a diner, you know, then people come in and, you know, they have a trauma, you know, they come to basically confess their, you know, kind of like, their trauma in the diner, who's supernatural, obviously, creates a dish for them that will basically signing a deed, you know, a deal with the devil, basically. Yeah. Right. So
each character it's an anthology that centers on this diner that's owned by this, you know, the devil, basically. And each character per episode comes in with a desire. They need something, and the devil tempts them. Will make that desire come true if you give your soul to me. And of course, they sign it. And because human frailty, like we just desire, we would love to indulge rather than to face hardships, you know. Right. And so it's really based on. And what I like about it is that intentionally, it's built as a horror series, but for me, it's not horror in terms of like jump scares or like crazy, you know, terrifying things. It's really horror in terms of what humans do to each other and what they are willing to do to get what they want, you know?
Right.
And in those terms, it's more psychological. And for me, I love those kinds of horror movies because they stay with you. I mean, The Shining, it's cryptic, right? And it's not just scary, it's eerie. And that kind of stuff stays with you after you watch it. And what we have here is also, they're all morality tales. It's all caution, you know, tales of caution to remind ourselves that, hey, you always have a choice to you know, do better, right?
I mean, they're all stories of families in trouble, you know? And I look at Shining is a good example. Poltergeist is a good example, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, and I think Devil's...
Conjuring, it's just like, you look at the best horror movies, it's all about families in trouble.
Look, The Conjuring Conjuring series is a huge hit in Vietnam, right? So, going back to, and it's, again, it's available worldwide on Netflix. You can fire up Netflix right now and watch all 6 episodes, right? Hopefully it gets renewed, you know, but it's something that is really great. It's a, you know, kudos to you, Ham. But like, I think going back to the, you're working with the writer's room. So like, it's like, kind of like, you're giving back, you know, you're in the sense that you want to kind of nurture kind of the next generation of Vietnamese creatives in Vietnam, right? So you're working with young writers who know the culture, you know, they know the cadence of the language, they know kind of like, look, my Vietnamese is basically, basically rooted in my family's Vietnamese, like from the pre-1975 Vietnamese, like that's outdated, right? I use outdated words,
Yeah.
But like, you know, like it's, again, you talked about kind of working with young writers because they know the culture, they're contemporary, they're Gen Zers, right? So they're Gen Alphas now, but like, but then you are kind of working with them and infusing it with structure, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of like the missing link, right? And you know, kind of like, what is your kind of, do you like working with, you know, working with young writers, or maybe working in a writer's room, what is your kind of like intent? What is your mission statement when it comes to kind of developing kind of just content that's relevant and performs well in Vietnam and basically connects with audiences?
I go back to the idea of collaboration. You know, and when you're talking about giving back, like these two writers that I've worked with, one, he's written many scripts. He's been working in the industry for 8 years and never had his own screen credit, because by the time he writes like the first drafts of everything, by the time it gets made, it's somebody else's name on it. So when Devil's Diner was released, you know, he made a post. He goes, oh my God, after 8 years, I finally see my name in the credit, you know?
Yeah.
And the other young writer, you know, she's crying. She's been working 5 years as well. And she's in tears when she saw her name listed first, because, you know, mine was the second, because I'm only there to help provide the structure and then to bring everything thematically together. But the dialogue is, it's all them making it sound local, making it sound real to the audiences. And that's where that magic of collaboration happens, you know? Because they're not really taught to see things thematically. They're just taught to just like, and I think it's from TV, right? Where Vietnamese TV, they don't have a lot of budget. So in terms of showing things visually, they just use dialogue to explain everything.
Right.
And so they're very used to doing that. And so a lot of times when I'm working with them, it's like, that's great, but you're telling. Now, how do we show it?
Yeah.
Right. And they're like, oh no, but that's gonna cost more money to shoot. And I'm like,
show don't tell.
I mean, let the filmmakers worry about shooting it. You worry about telling the story, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's a whole different kind of writing experience for them.
That's great. I mean, like, so like Devil's Diner, I mean, it's a success. I encourage everyone to check it out on Netflix worldwide. You can be, you know, it's really, really fun. And it's not jump scare scary, but it's really, it's more in the same vein, in the vein of like a Twilight Zone, right? So, mm-hmm.
I categorize it as if anybody's ever watched Midnight Diner, which is the thing, you know.
Yeah, the Japanese series, Midnight Diner.
Japanese series about food, but it's like Midnight Diner meets Hannibal with a touch of the Twilight Zone, right? It's very graphic, like Hannibal, but some of the stuff, they're like morality tales, like Twilight Zone or Black Mirror. It's social commentary, right?
Right,
but
right.
With the very ugly, beautiful food.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to close this conversation, Ham, what is your advice for, you know, up and coming filmmakers who, I mean, Vietnamese filmmakers, I mean, don't have to be in Vietnam. It can be, you know, in Orange County, they can be in Norway, they can be anywhere. What is your advice when it comes to becoming a filmmaker now in this kind of fractured marketplace, but at the same time, or maybe they're still working in the diaspora?
Yes, I encourage them to start by telling their story. And I think that's a lot of times people don't value their own personal stories, right? And I feel like what they don't understand is that the more personal you get, the more universal the story becomes. And so have that story that you want to tell, tell it to the best of your ability, right? And these days, cost is not really an issue anymore, right? Anybody can make films, right? And with
their iPhone, you mean?
iPhones, phones being so sophisticated, it really begins with the story that you want to tell. Find that story you want to tell, you know, and find the collaboration to help tell that story. Because what I've learned is that you don't work in this industry alone. It is all about collaboration. It's all about the family, the village that helps you build that house that is your film, build that world that is your film. I rely on my friends all the time. Like Anderson, I'm always getting feedback from you. Every time I write a new script, I go, what do you think about this? You know, you can't make it on your own. You don't make it on your own. And I think people kind of forget that when they're just looking, oh my God, it's that director's new film. Nope, there's a whole village of people, you know, behind me making this thing possible. And I think that what makes Devil's Diner so unique is that the entire crew that worked on it knew the script by heart. We're talking like from even like the lighting guy, you know, the grip, you know, the best boy, they knew. They're like, oh, this is the scene where this thing happens. Let me get that light for you. You know, they were 100% invested in the film. And it made such a huge difference. And you could see it. You could feel it, right, when you're watching the film, that there's a lot of love that went into filmmaking to make this series possible. And it's definitely not budget because we didn't have that. But like I said, for young filmmakers, find your collaborators, find those people that are going to go through the trenches with you, and they're going to be the ones that you'll be working with for the next 20 years. Yeah.
It's great advice, Ham. Congratulations on your success. And I encourage everyone to see Devil's Diner, which is on Netflix, you know, you can watch it anytime. And I wish you great success on your future projects, and keep going, keep at it, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anderson.
My team at East Films is going into production this summer on a Vietnam War period film, and it's made by Vietnamese filmmakers, entirely shot in Vietnam, called Picture House. And our team needs your help. Award-winning director Nguyen Vong Yen Minh brings his most personal film to life, a coming-of-age drama inspired by his childhood in Vung Tau, where his family ran a movie theater, screening films from all over the world. Our Indiegogo campaign is live through April 30th, and it's a date that marks the 50th anniversary of the end of the war. Your contribution will help this incredible story to the screen. Please support Picture House today by clicking on the links below to the campaign shared in the description.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker.
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%, vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.